Good morning and welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. This is Dan Eastman, your host, and today is Monday, November 27th, 2023. Thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate your viewership, not only at the Eastman Financial Report, but also WVW-TV, our network. We really appreciate the fact that you take time out of your busy schedule to tune in and watch our programming. As you know, we are now in the post-Thanksgiving season. Of course, Black Friday has come and gone, and today we're celebrating the national holiday of, Cyber Monday, and then tomorrow will be Giving Tuesday. So we are fully into opening the checkbooks and letting the money pour. So thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see what this week has to bring. As you know, WVW-TV provides some great program 24 hours a day. There's no paywall, there's no subscription, so there's no 40% off today because it's already free. But in order to do that, we have to raise funds, and of course we have generous donors such as yourself, the viewers, who can go to the WVW-TV Foundation and make a contribution, and that helps us keep this information flowing free at no charge. You can also be a sponsor. The sponsor for my program, as we all know, is Swiss America Trading, and that is, as I like to say, a fine purveyor of precious metals. It's an American company based in Arizona, and their business is to sell precious metals. So if you are interested in buying and owning and holding tangible precious metals, actually bits of metal, you might want to give Swiss America a call at 1-800-519-6271 and ask them to send you some free information. Tell them you heard about them on the Eastman Financial Report on WVW-TV. They're happy to send you information. If you go to their website, which is swissamerica.com, you can shop around and see what they have to offer. And if you use the promo code Eastman, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, they'll be happy to send you some free information on the market as well. And actually, right now, they're offering a great promotional special. And of course, this is the season, as I pointed out, between Black Friday and Cyber Monday. Everybody's busy shopping to save money. And if you go to the SwissAmerica.com website, you will be able to take advantage of an offer that they're currently promoting, which is $13.50 each for the standing Liberty half dollar silver coins. And as you know, those are bullion coins that are minted by the U.S. government, and they are guaranteed as to the purity of silver and also the quantity of silver in each coin. And $13.50, and that includes shipping to your home or office or business. And as you know, you're probably shopping online quite a bit today on Cyber Monday. Shipping is a thing. You know, sometimes it's free shipping and sometimes it gets a little pricey with precious metals. So today would be a great day to take advantage of that opportunity. If you're thinking about getting, you know, something for somebody a little bit hard to purchase for, you know, what do you give old Uncle Mortimer there? The reality is, if you give the gift of precious metals, people tend to not just consume them and throw them in the landfill. They tend to keep them for a long time, like forever. So precious metals are, certainly a thing. And if you're looking for, you know, stocking stuffers, something for the nieces and nephews, grandkids, children, whatever, certainly a gift of precious metals teaches them the value, that there is intrinsic value in certain things. Not everything is a consumable, disposable, but some things will hold their value for a very, 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 very long time. As a matter of fact, if you look at gold coins and gold, you merely need to grab your Bible, flip to the first chapter, Genesis, and within the very few first chapters, you'll see that gold is mentioned. I mean, it's been around since the very beginning as a precious, precious asset. So if you're thinking about adding precious metals to your, you know, holdings, or looking for a nice gift for somebody, go to SwissAmerica.com, use the promo code Eastman, and take advantage of the specials they're offering. And this is a great time to do it during the holiday gift-giving season and buying season. Okay, let's move on to the news today. Of course, you can expect a slow news week. The last week of November, we've gone through the American holiday season, holiday week of Thanksgiving last week, and I hope all of you had a blessed Thanksgiving, a time to relax and reflect and enjoy a long weekend, and also give thanks for all of the blessings that we continue to be showered with in the United States. And that's an important time to stop and think about such things. But we also know that it's the kickoff of the crazy holiday spending season. And we've been watching with eager anticipation of the numbers coming in from Black Friday. You know, of course, if the numbers are up, which means people have spent more money and Black Friday is robust, then that's a good thing. And of course, that would suggest that the economy is humming right along. And of course, the numbers that we're seeing in the media today are 7.5% over last year. So that's kind of interesting. And what it would suggest in a subtle glance is that, oh, look, the economy is doing quite well. The spending is up 7.5%. Of course, we want to bring a little doom and gloom to this analysis, so let's just do that because it's part of our critical thinking. And one question we'd want to ask as students of the economy is the 7.5% volume of goods, or is the 7.5% increase the pricing? Because if we know that inflation was raging at 9% last year, and inflation goes up, but those prices don't come back down. We know that last year they were up 9%, and this year they're up between 3.5% and 4%. That, you know, if you kind of do the math, that suggests maybe there's a 12% to 15% increase baked into the numbers. So when we see a 7.5% increase in sales from last year, and we think about how inflation was pretty hot last year, that suggests that perhaps people are paying 7.5% more money for the same or fewer goods. So I guess we would really like to start seeing a metric that is not cash register sales, which has the inflation built in, but we'd like to start seeing volumes. I mean, how much volume of material or products are being sold? And we never really see those numbers. We tend to see dollar numbers. So while we look at that number and think, well, that's a good thing that people are spending more money, the question is, are they spending more money on the same or fewer goods, or are they actually buying more stuff? And we shall see how that works out. One thing we do know is that the purchasing, at least on Black Friday, has been concentrated in personal type things, shoes and clothing and things that tend to be, you know, gifty type things. And that's an indicator that people are buying what they need to buy to live. And of course, electronic products are always a big hot item as well. And you see that you know, consumption continues. But one sub story that I noted that it's a little bit interesting to me is that there's a new back in the old days, we would call it layaway. You'd go into a store and you didn't have the money to buy something, so you would contract with the store, you know, sign a layaway slip, which is basically a written contract. And the idea is they would lay this away or set it away in the back room somewhere, and you'd come into the store and make periodic payments. And when the whole thing was paid up and paid in full, then the clerk would give you the merchandise and you'd be able to take it home and enjoy it for the holidays or whatever. And layaway was a big thing because the average American consumer did not have access to credit, and revolving credit really didn't come into its own until the 1970s. So it was not unusual to find layaway programs in some of the retail discount stores. I remember as a young guy that quite often families would use the layaway plan because they wanted to buy gifts for Christmas and they didn't have a great big pile of money. And if you didn't have money in your checkbook or your pocket, purse, pocket, wallet, whatever, you didn't have money. And effectively, you would maybe have a savings account and a checking account. But the idea of buying lots of stuff on credit and paying it back down the road sometime with high interest rates just didn't exist. So layaway became a thing. Well, I'm noticing that there's this emerging program that is happening with consumer spending. It's shift. They call it, I guess, buy now and pay later, or pay over time. Now, the difference is, you know, they don't set it on the dusty shelf in the back room somewhere until you've paid in full. Now you get to walk out of the store with it, but they're kind of expecting you to send them money and pay the bill over a period of time, a short period of time. Consumers are a savvy bunch. I mean, that's one thing we do is we spend money and we pay attention to how we do it. And when your dollars in your checkbook and savings account are few and your credit cards are racked to the max, what do you do to keep consuming? Well, never underestimate the ability of the free market to step in and solve somebody's problem. And that's basically what's happening. They've dusted off the layaway program idea, and effectively there are apps and there are in-store programs where, they'll basically allow you to purchase and take your goods home, but you have to make payments. Now, consumers are savvy and they think, it's an interesting thing because I'm paying like 29% on my credit card and things maxed out. I'm gonna be paying for that the rest of my life. This is another way to consume. You can acquire a thing or maybe a service, but most likely a thing, and the merchant will or the service provider will effectively create a platform where you're doing a layaway in modern time. I've seen this on more and more online shopping. You can make four convenient payments of X, and it always brings a smile to my face thinking about, this is sort of like a digital layaway program. But what it tells you is that consumers not only don't have cash and their credit cards are maxing or maxed, but they still want stuff, and this is a way that they can, basically acquire making four convenient payments, but at a much lower interest rate, or perhaps no interest rate at all. So that's a wise and rational economic decision. And keep in mind, one of the fundamental underpinnings of economic analysis is that there's an assumption and a presumption that the consumer will always act rationally. And of course, that's what'll happen. If you have big credit card debt and you're making big interest payments and the checkbook is a little empty and you still want stuff, there are alternatives and you make those decisions. So it's interesting to see, and it'll be more interesting to see as this trend emerges and grows and continues over time, whether it will really change the American perspective of how to go about buying things. It may very well be a good idea to purchase something and make four equal payments, and then it's paid in a short amount of time, it's over with, and you're not carrying revolving credit, ad infinitum at 18%, 29%, whatever the number is. So we're watching that trend because I think this is basically another way to fuel, the American consumer because it's all about, I mean, the whole, remember my whole, national income, my big ball of economic activity, that 80 plus percent of that activity is consumer spending. So you really want to get your share of the consumer dollar. And one way to do it is to offer a third path. There's, pay cash, or there's put it on your credit card, and now we're going back to layaway, or at least pay now and or buy now and pay later. So we'll see how that plays. Another interesting thing about the phenomenon of holiday spending is that we've been talking for months about how the American consumer, and I despise that term, but we're just going to use it because it's convenient. Apparently, people are born only to consume. And lo and behold, they are consuming. And of course, you'd expect Black Friday to be more important when the economy is tight. So if you are living on a tight budget, as many people are in this country, it would behoove you to get in line and go out and stand in line, wait for the doors to open and elbow your way in and fight for those bargains because you're trying to limit and lower and manage your holiday spend. So if you are tight, you are much more motivated to go out on Black Friday and purchase away and save money. And then of course today, Cyber Monday, this is a great time if if you don't have strong elbows or you're not interested in going to the mall, basically you can sit at the convenience of your home and shop online. And thank you for not shopping online and watching me. I appreciate it. I'll be done in 15 minutes and go back to shopping online. But the point is, if you're tight, you're going to do some bargain hunting. And I think that's a lot of what we're seeing. So if we concentrate the economic activity on Black Friday through Cyber Monday, and of course tomorrow is Giving Tuesday, you can still, feel remorse and maybe, give it to your favorite charity. But once that dust is settled and we move into the holiday spending season, the question becomes, was it one big blast on Black Friday, Thanksgiving weekend? Or is it going to continue on an upward trend through Christmas and New Year's and the holiday, traditional holiday spending season, Hanukkah and Kwanzaa, all of all the holidays. So the question is, what happens to the trend line? Was it a big blip and then it kind of flattens out, or is it, you know, just going to keep going, you know, to infinity? And we'll see, because I think this is, you know, the time of year we watch consumer spending. Sadly, though, I mean, we're starting to see historic highs in consumer credit card debt, and we know, of course, student loans kicked in September, October. So we're watching sort of to see the American mood or psychology of consumer spending, see where it goes. I'm suspicious that perhaps we saw a big burst on Thanksgiving weekend, and it's going to taper off, but we'll see. We'll see. I guess it depends on everybody's pocketbook joyfulness. So we watch that and let's see what happens. I did want to point out a few other things that come along in this quiet news week. There was a story about 40% of personal income taxes goes to support the national debt. And the national debt, of course, is the $33 trillion that the federal government has managed to rack up. And there's effectively that debt is T-bills and bonds and treasury notes. It's all of the debt instruments issued by the federal government. It's a great big pile of them, $33 trillion, could be $35 trillion as we continue to spend in these, you know, $1.5 to $2 trillion per year deficits. And the interesting thing about that story is that the 40% of personal income taxes, now it didn't mention corporate income taxes. So what it suggests to me is that individuals, people that pay income taxes, 40% of those dollars are going to pay the interest on the debt that has already been issued and is floating and it's out there. And effectively what that means is that $1 trillion in interest isn't being used to build new bridges or airports or whatever the federal government spends its money on, our money on. So it's an interesting metric, because when you think about personal income taxes are coming in at 2.5 trillion a year. That's what we the people pay. It's not corporations, it's personal. But you're seeing 40% of those dollars now going to support the debt. And the problem with that model, of course, is the interest rates have been raised first by the Federal Reserve, tweaking the Federal Open Market Committee tweaks the interbank rate, which has a trickle-down effect or a rippling effect and raises the interest rates throughout the economy. And of course, we see that in 8% mortgages, 7.5% mortgages. What it tells you is that those dollars are just simply allocated for debt. They're not allocated for Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, any of the infrastructure programs. It is, and even defense. I mean, you're really looking at a point as those debt instruments renew, the interest rates are higher. I mean, because you get these old 1.5% notes coming due, and now they're at 4.5%. So it's basically building upon itself, and I think that curve will peak down the road as federal debt is refinanced, because they're certainly not paying it off. They're issuing more at higher interest rates, and the low interest rate instruments that are coming due are basically being refinanced at higher rates. So effectively, that's a real debt problem that the U.S. Is going to have to wrestle with. But, you know, keep in mind, it is not just our problem. If you look at sovereign debt around the world, sovereign debt is debt that's issued by a government. They're sovereigns, you know, and they issue debt. You're seeing this increase in debt issuance around the world. And, you stop and you think about, well, why is that? I mean, what enables and empowers the ability of a government to issue debt that is beyond the tax base, tax and spend? Okay, you tax the money and you spend it, and then you borrow the money and you spend that too. And of course, it's really the emergence of the central bank idea that you have the ability to create money in a system. If you think about how this big economic ball of activity operates, the national economy, there's a presumption that within that is there's money changing hands. And of course, the question becomes, where does that money come from? And, you know, back in the olden days, before the Federal Reserve, the United States Treasury would issue currency, or private banks would issue currency. And that was the liquid money, the fuel or the lubricant that made the whole thing spin. Because an economy can spin with a barter economy, but it's pretty small. An economy can spin on a gold and silver economy, but keep in mind that's finite and it's based upon how much gold and silver there is within the ball. But when you come up with a paper currency or a fiat currency, then that becomes an infinity. And that ball can grow very, very, very large because you're constantly putting new money in it. But the question becomes, you know, what is money and where does it come from? And what we see globally is that money is created and it's used to inflate that ball of economy. So that's why we see, you know, 9% inflation last year, and we see our Black Friday shopping is up 7.5%. And I ask the question, is it increase in volume of goods sold or is it more dollars to buy the same goods? I think it's more dollars to buy the same goods. Well, we shall see. We shall see. So the problem we have with this global economy is that it is very much based on this idea of a fiat currency that has the ability. It's expansionary. And, you know, it's one thing to expand an economy. It's another thing to inflate an economy. So it's an issue that's not going away anytime soon. And that's why you may want to be thinking about how do you protect yourself from that environment of inflation? Because, you know, it affects everyone. I mean, it affects everybody in the economy. And that's why you want to be holding and owning things that go up in value as inflation chugs along. You want to have things that go up in value, like a house or a piece of land would do that. A car wouldn't, because a car is a depreciable asset. Now, having said that, if you've priced 1972 GTOs lately, that's crazy. Some cars become speculative collector's items, but the reality is when you're living in an economy, there are very few things that go up in value. And if you don't own a home, your rent will go up, but your equity is not going up. So that suggests perhaps you might want to be thinking about putting some of your money into things that will go up in value instead of down. And gold and silver tends to do that, antiques, collectibles, things like that. Although you have to parse that out between money you need to live and money that you can hedge as a hedge against inflation. So it puts the typical American consumer in somewhat of a hot spot. You not only have prices going up, but you also have economies flating, and then you get this constant droning of federal debt playing in the back that is siphoning more and more of your tax dollars away. And at the end of the day, you know, if the budget were to be balanced, let's say for some miraculous reason, the can stops being kicked down the road by Congress every 3 months, and the continuing resolutions, they say, you know what, we have to have an annual budget. We're going to balance the budget based on the taxpayers. If that were to happen, and it's not going to happen because tax rates would be like 95%, but if it did happen, let's just pretend, then you still have this $33 or $35 trillion in leftover debt that has to be paid back. And you're not only going to need interest on that debt, the carrying costs, but if you want to start whittling away at it, you're going to have to tax to whittle away. And you're going to be taxing to pay interest, and you're going to be taxing to spend on all the social programs of the military and all the things that the government spends its money on. So it kind of puts us in a bleak situation at this point. We hope that those in Congress can come up with a magic solution to fix that whole thing. I like to do a lot of economic research and historical research. And it reminded me of a phrase that was attributed to President Richard Nixon, but really came from Milton Friedman, and who was a monetarist economist. He was sort of on the conservative side, and he developed monetary theory out of the University of Chicago. And the idea was the velocity of money in the economy will make that big ball grow bigger and bigger. Or if you pull the money away, it's like sort of like the punch bowl. You pull the money away, the ball will contract. So Milton Friedman's whole idea is you got to make a lot of money, you got to blow it into the economy, and it grows, and makes everything big, and then bigger economy, collect more taxes, and have a more more generous government, you know, or at least a more productive government. But his comment, and Nixon's comment, I'll start with him, was that we are all Keynesians now. But keep in mind, he didn't really say that. I mean, he basically was implying that after he took the dollar off the gold standard in 71, 72, there was a lot of debate in the middle of the Vietnam War about that. And President Nixon decided that it was no longer credible to price gold at $35 per ounce because the federal dollars in circulation globally, if you take all those dollars, divide them by 35, you should have that many ounces in Fort Knox. And of course, it was way out of whack. And the French actually figured this out during the Vietnam War. They were very eager to preserve their colonial empire in Southeast Asia, but they had no ability to defend it. So of course you go looking for your cousin Uncle Sam there, and you say, hey, you know, we want to keep these colonial places because there's minerals and oil and all sorts of good stuff, and you guys have to help us keep our colonial empire. And the United States was like, no, we're not really interested in that. But the French pushed, and of course, one thing leads to another, and then there's dominoes and communists, and the next thing you know, the United States is pretty well embroiled in the Vietnam War. And of course, as we did not want to participate, and we wanted to extract ourselves from that mess, the French pointed out that, you know, if we bring all the dollars we have, you have an obligation under Bretton Woods to give us for every $35 we give you, you have to give us an ounce of gold, and we may show up at Fort Knox with enough dollars to basically demonstrate that you don't have enough gold in Fort Knox, and the dollar is not $35 per ounce. Well, that was a policy problem for the United States because after, you know, it was post-World War II, the United States is all things to all people. I mean, you know, Santa Claus got nothing on the U.S. government, I'll tell you. And at the end of the day, Nixon called their bluff. He realized that there weren't enough ounces to support all the dollars that were in circulation. There were vastly more dollars in circulation globally than could be anywhere attributed to the holdings of ounces in Fort Knox. So he basically moved us off the gold standard, said from now on, the currency will float against other global currencies and we will not redeem American dollars for gold. He didn't say that we didn't have the gold. He just basically converted it to a floating economy or a floating dollar. And of course, instantly, inflation goes through the roof. I mean, this was an explosion in interest, that inflation. And if you remember back in the day when Nixon was forced to resign because of the, I guess, the Watergate fiasco, representative from Michigan, Gerald Ford, who had been the vice president after Spiro Agnew was resigned from office, became president of the United States. And then Ford's big problem, one of his big problems, was the inflation problem. And of course, they came up with a clever little button that said WIN, W-I-N. It was whip inflation now. And it was a big fight. We have to stop inflation because what happened was as the money, the dollar was untethered from gold and began to price itself against the Deutschmark and the French franc and the British pound and all of the convertible currencies in the world, prices were going through the roof. Imports were going crazy. I mean, it was very, very expensive. And of course, Gerald Ford was president for about 2 years, and then he lost re-election to Jimmy Carter. And poor Jimmy Carter. And we do offer our sympathies to the Carter family for the loss of our first lady last week. That was, very remarkable life at 97 years old. Quite a long time. But anyway, poor Jimmy Carter from Georgia stepped into an economic maelstrom that, of course, gave him one term in office and brought us the Reagan administration, which finally got somewhat of a handle on inflation. But the damage was done. And when you detether the dollar from gold, it is clearly today. I mean, if you look at the price of a house today, you know, you get $52 million for a house on Long Island, or even in my neighborhood, you know, you can spend pretty close to $1 million on a house. The problem is from a house that was probably worth $60,000 to go to $1 million, same house, It's exactly the same house. Maybe they put a new roof on it, but it's the same house. And that shows you the impact, excuse me, the impact of inflation over time. So we're in a situation where, you know, holding dollars is problematic, but it's, you know, it's the currency we have. So you may want to take some strategic steps to protect yourself from inflation, because with massive debt and, you know, no signs of stopping, the deficit spending in Washington, it may be time to, you know, think strategically about how do you position yourself. Well, there's lots of other stories to get to. We'll be on all week, and I'll be happy to talk about all of these additional economic indicators as they come along to give us a perspective of what the economy is doing and how to best position yourself to go forward and to prosper. Because keep in mind, we still have an amazing economy here. It's just that you have to be wise, you know, as gentle as doves and wise as a serpent. And that's an important thing to remember. So anyway, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching WVW TV. And I look forward to chatting with you again tomorrow. Have a great afternoon. Bye.